HarperCollins presents When Eight Bells Toll by Alistair MacLean, read by Jonathan Oliver. Chapter 1. Dusk Monday to 3 a.m. Tuesday. The Peacemaker Colt has now been in production without change in design for a century. Buy one today, and it would be indistinguishable from the one Wyatt Earp wore when he was the Marshal of Dodge City. It is the oldest handgun in the world, without question the most famous, and, if efficiency in its designated task of maiming and killing be taken as criterion of its worth, then it is also probably the best handgun ever made. It is no light thing, it is true, to be wounded by some of the Peacemaker's more highly esteemed competitors, such as the Luger or Mauser. But the high-velocity, narrow-calibre, steel-cased shell from either of those just goes straight through you, leaving a small, neat hole in its wake, and spending the bulk of its energy on the distant landscape. Whereas the large and unjacketed, soft-nosed lead bullet from the Colt mushrooms on impact, tearing and smashing bone and muscle and tissue as it goes, and expending all its energy on you. In short, when a Peacemaker's bullet hits you in, say, the leg, you don't curse, step into shelter, roll and light a cigarette one-handed, then smartly shoot your assailant between the eyes. When a Peacemaker bullet hits your leg, you fall to the ground unconscious. And if it hits the thigh bone, and you're lucky enough to survive the torn arteries and shock, then you will never walk again without crutches. Because a totally disintegrated femur leaves the surgeon with no option but to cut your leg off. And so I stood absolutely motionless, not breathing. For the Peacemaker Colt that had prompted this unpleasant train of thought was pointed directly at my right thigh. Another thing about the Peacemaker, because of the very heavy and varying trigger pressure required to operate the semi-automatic mechanism, it can be wildly inaccurate unless held in a strong and steady hand. There was no such hope here. The hand that held the Colt, the hand that lay so lightly yet purposefully on the radio operator's table, was the steadiest hand I've ever seen. It was literally motionless. I could see the hand very clearly. The light in the radio cabin was very dim. The rheostat of the angled table lamp had been turned down until only a faint pool of yellow fell on the scratched metal of the table, cutting the arm off at the cuff, but the hand was very clear. Rock steady, the gun could have lain no quieter in the marbled hand of a statue. Beyond the pool of light I could half sense, half see, the dark outline of a figure leaning back against the bulkhead, head slightly tilted to one side, the white gleam of unwinking eyes under the peak of a hat. My eyes went back to the hand. The angle of the Colt hadn't varied by a fraction of a degree. Unconsciously, almost, I braced my right leg to meet the impending shock. Defensively, this was a very good move, about as useful as holding up a sheet of newspaper in front of me. I wished to God that Colonel Sam Colt had gone in for inventing something else, something useful, like safety pins. Very slowly, very steadily, I raised both hands, palms outward, until they were level with my shoulders. The careful deliberation was so that the nervously inclined wouldn't be deceived into thinking that I was contemplating anything ridiculous, like resistance. It was probably a pretty superfluous precaution, as the man behind that immobile pistol didn't seem to have any nerves, and the last thought I had in my head was that of resistance. The sun was long down, but the faint red afterglow of sunset still loomed on the northwest horizon, and I was perfectly silhouetted against it through the cabin doorway. The lad behind the desk probably had his left hand on the rheostat switch, ready to turn it up and blind me at an instant's notice. And there was that gun. I was paid to take chances. I was paid even to step on occasion into danger, but I wasn't paid to act the part of a congenital and
Sample complete. Ready to continue?